Well, good afternoon to you, and thanks for joining us here at the intersection of faith and culture. This is the Meeting House on Faith Radio, and on Tuesdays we have our relationship section of the program, and we deal, of course, first and foremost with our relationship with God and how that determines the types of relationships that we have, husband and wife, parent and child, and other relationships in our lives. And joining us on a monthly basis is author and columnist John Rosemond. He is noted as a conference and seminar leader and someone that people turn to get good, solid, and I might say scripturally based parenting advice. John Rosemond, thank you for spending some time with us today here on Faith Radio.
Thanks once again, Bob, for having me on Meeting House. I always enjoy it.
Well, thanks for spending some time. And there's a word that's been on my mind here recently, and that is responsibility. And I know that you are an advocate of giving children things to do around the house, learning that responsibility at an early age. We've talked about that just a bit in the past, and I wanted to return to that subject today and want to ask you a couple of logistical questions here at the very beginning with respect to getting children oriented toward doing chores around the house or outside the house, whatever the case may be, in the yard or whatever. What age do parents, in your estimation, need to be thinking about giving children chores to do, and why is that important?
Well, there's a time for everything, we are told in Scripture, and a season to every activity under heaven. And in this case, the optimal season to begin within which to begin assigning children chores, Bob, is right after they turn 3 years old. The pump, so to speak, is primed at that age for the acceptance of those assignments, and that's confirmed by the fact that children that age, when they see their parents and especially their mothers doing chores around the house, sweeping, vacuuming, whatever, they want to jump right in. They want to help, and this is the time to capitalize on that interest and enthusiasm by beginning to give children chores. And by the way, Bob, I mean, the importance of chores is that they assign to the child not only the means of making a contribution to the family, but they also assign to the child a role in the family.
And that helps to really underscore not only that sense of responsibility, but a sense of, I guess we might say, identity and belonging in
the
house.
Yes. Both of those things. And the unfortunate thing is that most children today, as opposed to the way it was when I was a child, I'm 58 years old, have very few chores around the house. And as a consequence, they are not only not participating in any kind of contributory way within their families, but they also have no real clearly defined positive role within their families. They are strictly consumers within their families. They are not contributors. And I maintain that this is a major obstacle in the lives of today's children when it comes to developing a sense of obligation toward other people, which is really part and parcel of what we're talking about when we talk about responsibility. Part of that is a sense of obligation and an understanding that in order to get any relationship to work, whether it's a relationship between yourself and another person or a relationship between yourself and an organization, and in this case the organization is the family, that the relationship has got to be a two-way street. It's got to be give and take. And unfortunately, again, to bring this around full circle, too many children in America today are takers within their families. They're not being required to give.
Well, and I also think, John, on the broader scope with respect to society in general, if in the home we are teaching our children not to be contributors but to be consumers, that mindset will be reflected as they get out into, as we say, the real world. And that could be the cause of some of the societal attitudes that we have today, that people don't necessarily, in many cases, or I should say in some cases, don't see the importance of being a contributor to society as a whole.
Absolutely. And I hear this echoed I hear this echoed by people who are managers in business and managers in corporate environments around the country who bemoan to me the fact that so many of today's young people coming out of college, they lack an understanding that when they are hired, it's their job to do. It's not the corporation's responsibility to do for. But these children, apparently, in great numbers, are getting out of college seeking the same relationship with employers that they had with their parents, and bringing, therefore, to the workplace an entitlement attitude, not an attitude that reflects a well-instilled work ethic or service ethic.
And I have to think, tying this back into Scripture, of course, there's the verse, I believe it's 1 Thessalonians, that talks about if a person will not work, he will not eat. I think that there's a theme throughout the Bible that teaches us to be responsible individuals.
Absolutely, Bob. It's Scripture affirms time and time again that we are obligated to others. And, taking this back into the home, the only people in the parent-child relationship today, all too often, even in Christian families, unfortunately, who are acting as if they have any obligation whatsoever, are the parents. And children are the recipients, therefore, of tremendous largesse on the part of parents, a tremendous amount of attention and a tremendous amount of material things, and a tremendous amount of energy expended in their direction in many forms. And, to a certain degree, children need attention, and children need material things, and children need some energy put into them. But when you put this formula, this equation, out of balance, the unfortunate victim of that state of imbalance is going to be the child eventually.
Well, and John, I didn't share my talking points with you prior to this interview, but one of the operative words in my next question is balance. And you talk about this whole notion of consumerism versus someone being a contributor and the entitlement mentality. Well, let's think about this. What about allowances for children? Where does that fit into the overall equation?
My feeling about allowances is that when you start giving an allowance to a child, that you should also hand over to the child responsibility for some area, fiscal area of his life. In other words, with a five-year-old, you can say to the five-year-old with an allowance, we don't buy your toys anymore, except on your birthday and at Christmas. You buy your own toys now. They have to, you can only buy toys that fit, these requirements, these parameters. But with this money, we're handing this responsibility over to you now. And that causes, and especially if the money is a conservative amount, causes the child to have to begin, even at the age of five, setting priorities, making responsible decisions, understanding the consequences of decisions that he makes, postponing gratification, and the like. And this can be such a wonderful lesson for children, Bob. Unfortunately, too many American parents give allowances without any instruction whatsoever. It's just, here's some money for you. And the children, understandably, do very irresponsible things with the money, whether those kids are 5 years old or 15.
So, in your estimation, giving a child an allowance without what we might call strings attached, or without using this as a tool to teach responsibility, it leads to things such as perhaps the child thinking, well, this is just discretionary income, and he or she can spend it however that child wishes to do.
Exactly. And the money is therefore spent in a very self-centered way quite often. It's just used to gratify impulses. Mm. And, it says in Scripture, Bob, you know this as well as I do, and everybody listening has heard this, whether they're Christian or not, train up a child in the way that he should go, Proverbs 22:6. And what that means is that what you do today, should be aimed at, is the way that I put it, the adult you want your child to be when your child is 30 years old. Do you want your child to be thrifty? Do you want your child to be economical? Do you want your child to make responsible financial decisions? And so on and so forth. And all parents would answer yes to that, to those questions. Therefore, the parenting decisions that you make today need to be consistent with that long-range vision that you have of your child. And unfortunately, Bob, this is, you know, this is not a vision or the sort of vision that's being incorporated into today's parenting. All too often, unfortunately, today's parents are trying to keep their children happy today, keep smiles on their faces today, and don't realize that you can keep a smile on a child's face today and compromise the child's future in the process.
John Roseman joining us today, and you can go to John's website, Roseman, R-O-S-E-M-O-N-D.com, and also the scripturally based website, parentingbythebook.com. More with John Roseman coming up as the Meeting House continues this afternoon here on Faith Radio. Glad you've joined us here for another edition of The Meeting House on Faith Radio. Author, conference speaker, and columnist John Roseman joining us. And John is one of the regular contributors to Montgomery Parents Magazine. You can read his monthly column there. And John, we are speaking here on the Tuesday of what is known as spring break around much of the Faith Radio broadcast area. And it's very interesting. I was just reading online yesterday about a study that shows that children today in this survey are experiencing a lack of outdoor activities. And I know that you write quite commonly about the fact that when you were growing up, you spent a lot of time outdoors. Comment on the need and the benefits, if you will, of children spending time outdoors. Hey, I think this is a great subject for spring break. Now that the rain has come through, it's going to be a little bit cool, but still some opportunities for kids to enjoy the great outdoors.
Well, the real problem here, Bob, I think, is not that children aren't spending enough time outside. It's that children are not spending, and this is true from very early ages, children are not being allowed these days enough time in self-directed pursuits. Take the average 9-year-old today as opposed to the average 9-year-old 50 years ago when I was 9 years old or thereabouts. Almost every child I knew, almost every peer that I knew, kid I went to school with 50 years ago, by the age of 9, each and every one of us had a hobby. Now, a hobby is a self-directed pursuit. It's not something that your parents hover over telling you how to do. They provide you some initial guidance to get you going, and from that point on, you develop your own initiative through the participation that you put forth in this hobby. Today's children, you ask a 9-year-old today what is his hobby, and he looks at you with a blank expression. Today's children are involved in entirely too many adult-directed activities. Another example would be 50 years ago when I played baseball at the age of 9. I played, you know, with my friends in an empty lot. We got the game together. We decided who were the captains. We picked the teams. The captains assigned positions. We negotiated the rules. We negotiated any conflicts and so on and so forth. These were growth-producing experiences. And today's kids are participating in these highly organized activities where the adults determine who plays what position. The adults determine what the rules are. The adults negotiate any conflicts. The children are not decision makers in these sports. The children are only performers. And the transition from the child being an active participant, a director, to simply being a performer is, I think, reflected in the fact that 50 years ago, parents didn't come see these sandlot games. Today, parents turn out in droves for these children's sports activities. And while there may be I won't deny that there's probably some value to them. I think that the fact that children are not being allowed to make any decisions when it comes to these activities is again going to compromise their development in the long run, relatively speaking.
Well, I think that's something good to think about. And we, of course, as we have parents listening this afternoon, many probably are already feeling here with the advent of baseball season that they are, quote, living at the ballpark. That's a phrase that a parent used to my wife just the other day. And there's, again, we go back to that word balance. And it's very important that we take some of these principles that you've been sharing with us this afternoon and encourage our kids to be involved in decision-making process. Of course, you're not saying go out and withdraw your child from baseball or softball or organized sports entirely, but there are some things to think about and some principles that we need to be aware of as parents.
Well, Bob, to respond to that in a way that will probably surprise you and our listeners, I travel the country 8 months a year, and I talk to perhaps more parents in America face-to-face than does anybody else in my field. And I have encountered hundreds and hundreds of parents who tell me that their children are not involved in any of these after-school sports. And I've even had the opportunity to meet some of these children, and I have never heard testimony that is negative. These children are well-behaved, they're happy, they're content, they're relaxed, they're not self-absorbed, they're respectful of other people, they do well in school. And I'm convinced, Bob, that that this has to do with the fact that when your children are not involved in these after-school activities, the family functions better. I was somewhere in America recently, and a fellow comes up to me and just kind of casually says that his child is on the 8- or 9-year-old traveling soccer team for that area of the country for children that age. And that every single weekend in the fall and in the spring, the family lives in motels around the state and around the region as they follow the team from city to city in its travels. And I thought, well, is there a family in the house? Where is the family here? And I think this is what's being lost in America, is a sense that the needs of the family should always come first. And if it's a question of sacrificing something that will compromise the needs of the family or sacrificing an after-school activity, I would always vote for protecting and preserving the integrity and functioning of the family.
Well, I think this is something very good to think about today. And John, you've left us with some great principles to put into action. And we trust that parents, as they look at the family schedule, will prayerfully consider some of these principles and some of these ideas that you've put forward. However, John, and as we close here, we're going to kind of table this till next month, but I guess from a biblical standpoint, the role of the parent is not the micromanager of our children's lives, is it?
No, it is not. the role of parent is to be a leader of children, and I keep emphasizing this over and over again to all of my audiences that parenting is leadership. And that effective leadership does not include micromanagement. And all too many parents today, when it comes to homework, when it comes to after-school recreation, when it comes to their children's social lives, are micromanagers. And the problem with micromanagement in any context is that it not only creates a leadership deficiency, but also does not pass along to the student what the student truly needs to learn.
Well, next month, The Parent as Micromanager, comments from John Rosemond here on The Meeting House on Faith Radio, rosemond.com, parentingbythebook.com on the World Wide Web. John, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Bob, thank you once again.